It's good to see y'all here this morning. Is everybody just so wide awake and excited? And kind of reminds me of being at home, the home church there, just on, especially on Sunday mornings. But it's really a great day to be alive. It's beautiful outside and step into the house of the Lord and seek after the Lord. I told Brother Gabbard, well, I got to a couple of things here, and I'm going to use them both, I think. But I'm just worried about getting them in the right order. You know what I mean? You want to make sure that you're following after the mind of the Lord, and I've really been trying to do that. Last night, Brother Bridges preached wonderful. And I guess it's probably the first time in a long time that I ever went to church and about got seasick. Just got to tell me about that. But it was wonderful preaching. And I'm one of the ones I've been out with him on the water. Him and his boy managed to get me in that boat, and we was out there shrimping, throwing a net and trying to catch him. There was a couple of oysters that come up in one of them net loads, and it'll open them right there, eat them right out of the boat. Okay. But, before I went, there's some stuff called Dramamine for motion sickness. So I took one or two before I went out there. And it did get a little boisterous out there. I took another one. And before it was over, I felt like I could walk on the water. Well, that's good stuff. I'm telling you, if you ever really just need a supercharge, you don't need caffeine. Dramamine. Praise the Lord. I work for them. I'm one of their spokesmen. I want you to grab your Bibles. I want to look at another Old Testament character. Yesterday when we spoke a little bit about Daniel, and I may go back to him again, but I'd like for you to turn your Bible over to the book of Judges, and in Judges chapter number 13, and I just really feel like this is, you know, I probably ought to stick with the other theme, but this just keeps coming to me, and that I need to speak about this. And appreciate all the young folks that are here in the service. And I want you all to know that before I speak on some of these topics, some of these issues, I have already spoke about them at home. To the home folks, to my home church. I don't do it in the form of practice. I do it in the form of burden. That's where the Lord has burdened me to put the majority of my ministry. But this is something, it's in the book of Judges. And, of course, yesterday I enjoyed Brother Gabbard's message. And, we went to pray for some folks yesterday. And, you know, I'm not as old as Brother Gabbard, you know, and, I'm not as old as Brother Bridges. I'm just kind of a kid here. One of the young guys on the ticket. But, I was standing over there, and, Brother Horton was there, and, Brother Philip was there, and, we were praying for some different folks. And I just stepped back and said to the back of my mind, who would have ever thought years down the road after coming out of Karnak, years out of the road, I'd be with a group of men like that praying for sick folks. I really felt a moment of appreciation there to the Lord. But Judges chapter 13. Verse 24. And the woman bare a son, called his name Samson. And the child grew, and the Lord blessed him. I want to talk to you about something today, and I don't know how wound up I'm going to get. But I want to talk to you about the burden of responsibility. That's what I want to talk about. The burden, or the burden of potential, your potential responsibility, what you can be and what you can do. And I might as well just start right off just with a slap right in the middle of the face. There are some people in this world that I cannot trust my car keys to. That's just kind of how it's going to go. So, I mean, there are some people in this world I can't trust my pulpit to. I recognize that sometimes in my jovial nature, and sometimes I laugh to keep from crying, but in my jovial nature, sometimes, especially when I was a much, much younger preacher, some of my shenanigans that I went through and done, you know, was, I can't even hardly believe it myself. But there is a point in time in every one of our lives, and I know this is hard for some 80-year-olds to grab a hold of, but there is a point in time in every one of our lives that we have to grow up. You can't be an 18-year-old, 10-year-old all your life. You have to grow up. You have to reach an age of responsibility. You have to. First church I ever pastored, I had the whole weight of this responsibility tossed on my shoulders, and I recognized right then that there is a certain amount. There is a certain amount of security in being an evangelist, because all you got to worry about is you're part of the service. But there's that pastor. He's standing up there. He is responsible for song service. He is responsible for every kook that walks through the door. And he's responsible. You know, I have lots of responsibilities there at our church at in West Plains. The other day we was having they were having a ladies rally. And at that ladies rally, they had asked Sister Shirley Lester to come and speak at the ladies rally. And then I was going to have her hold over there and preach over the weekend, her and Brother Freddie. And we was standing there in the auditorium, and there were people across the road over in Fellowship Hall. I wished I would do something. We were standing there just in the auditorium talking, and there was somebody tapped on the door behind me back toward the Sunday school classrooms. And so, assuming that it was somebody that goes to our church and a member of our church there, because they were in the back of the church in the Sunday school, I didn't know that it was somebody that was just wanting to speak to the pastor. I mean, would you? I didn't know it. And so, assuming it was one of my church folks, I went to barking. When, woof, I'd bark. I mean, back in Sunday school room, I just stood there for the longest time. When I opened the door, is a complete stranger standing there looking at me. And she said, "I have dogs too." Okay. We're talking about responsibility here. Okay. So I probably, instead of wearing a necktie, I should put on a flea collar. But there is a point in every one of our lives. And you know, sometimes I really think that some folks say they don't know what responsibility really is. They don't understand it, and they shun it, and they run from it, and really it's a valuable asset. But there's also the responsibility of personal obligation, where husbands are responsible breadwinners of the home, and we're responsible at children, and we're responsible for jobs, and we are, you don't buy things when you're not responsible enough to pay for them. You don't get them. You don't just do stuff because you can, just because you have 18 and a half credit cards in your back pocket. It's not responsible to fill them all up and get yourself in such a financial mess that all you end up doing is paying the interest. That is not responsible, living. It's not. Now hang on. And there's just some people that just can't come to grips with maturity. They can't come to grips with some of the sacrifices involved in being mature or being an adult or being responsible, or they can't come to grips with it. But there is such a burden that ought to fall upon us to be responsible, because God sees potential in every one of us. If God could see potential in Samson and bless him, bless his life, touch the child, God blessed him as he grew. If God can see down the road and see everything that's fixing to happen and yet see potential in this boy, you ought to see potential in yourself. You ought to see yourself as a potential song leader, or see yourself as a potential deacon. See yourself as a potential choir member. See yourself as a potential preacher. See yourself as a potential breadwinner, a husband, or a potential wife. We got to get to that place in our lives that we get burdened to be more than what we are right now. You've got to want to be something more for God than a bench warmer. I appreciate everybody that's in the bleachers. I appreciate the bleachers. But I don't appreciate the fact that the bleachers always think it's the same 10 that's doing all the playing down on the court. It's the same ones that do the singing, the same ones that cook for the funerals, the same ones that get everything together for the homecoming, the same ones that we always got there. Boy, we're for you. Man, yeah, we're doing a little church remodeling project, and it's going to be all hands on deck, because that's the responsible thing to do. And one of the things that I'm actively working on is teaching my teenagers and my young folks about their potential. I don't think that young people growing up in the house of God, I don't think that their only potential is to stay there until they're 18 and then blow out of there and turn their back on everything that they've been raised around. I don't think that's responsible. I don't think they realize that's not a responsible reaction to life. But I mean, there are Christians that have not reached their full potential, and there are a couple of the things that I want to tell you all today, and I am going to be careful about it. I really am. But a couple of things that just really weighs heavy upon my mind. Samson, in his early days, he was raised right. Yes, he was. He was raised right. Yes, he was. His mom and dad, handpicked by God for that young man to come into the existence, and he was raised to a point that he started picking up standards. He started getting convictions. I mean, he was raised to the point of being such a separated young man as a Nazarite that he started with convictions in his life. I mean, he was convicted of wine, the juice, the fermented stuff from the vines. He was convicted against that. Convicted against having anything to do with a dead body. Convicted of not cutting his hair. Ain't that a switch? Convicted. I mean, had a conviction about it because of the way that he was raised and the home environment that he was in. I mean, he lived about 15 miles from Jerusalem, and his parents was devout, and God had already manifested himself in his life, and really and truthfully, I've noticed this. Children, and I this is where I got to be careful, because I don't have any children. This is where I stick straight to the Bible, and if any parent walks up to me and says, you don't know, I can just go to the Scriptures. That's all I do know. And I've seen this in Scriptures, and I've seen this in life, that children at 6 years old that are allowed to live like animals are going to be demons at 16. Oh, no, baby, here, no, don't break it. No, don't break the dishes. No, sweetheart, we don't do stuff like that. Oh, no, don't kill the cat. Don't choke it. God bless that cat. You ought to know better than that. You're three. Listen. Oh, is it? Did it just suddenly get quiet in here? Or maybe it's... Hello. I've noticed this. And I've seen this. There are some evangelistic ministries that are killed. Not because the guy wasn't a good preacher, but he wasn't a good teacher. Oh, my. Hello? Is this right? I'm just shaking to make sure I'm right here. Everything's a-thinking right here. You know, we have had time to time preachers come through. And, you know, I don't expect... I mean, I've got kids in our church. Come on. I mean, my little boys in the church, they're not monks. They don't wear the... You know, and all the little girls in our church... Their kids are kids, but there's been a few times in my life. I can remember one instance when a preacher was preaching for him. He had this little boy. It was just really, really, really. And if you're trying to figure this out, you'll never do it because there's a lot of them out there. But he had this little boy. And while he was preaching and they were singing in the altar service, the boy had this other microphone, and he was playing the drums with our microphones on the piano bench where his mother was sitting. Now, they hadn't informed me that she was deaf and dumb and blind. She must have been, though, because anybody ought to be able to see their child with a church microphone beating it against the piano bench. Don't you think? Here, sister, would you try these on, please? Would you... Boy, you're quiet. So, I did my thing. I sitting up there on the platform was reminding the drummer, whoever it is, tonight before they get over there, they'll need a chair. It could be a tragedy. So right over here by the piano, I had this chair, and there was that child, and I went over to the child, and I took him, you know, just kind of picked him up gently. Gently. I know how to handle watermelons and stuff without busting them. Pick him up gently, and I set him in the chair, and I said, I don't know about these other people in your life. But I said, right now, you're in my church, and that's my microphone, and you're in this chair, and if you get up out of this chair, I am going to... Never tell them exactly what you're going to do. Then you won't be a liar. I said, don't you get up out of that chair. So, they said, precious child. After service, we was all shaking hands and everything, and evangelist come to me. I mean, walked up and he said, "What'd you say to my boy?" I said, "I told him." He said, "Well, before you tell me anything," he said, "you're going to have..." I can't get him to get up. I had to go release him. Huh? Isn't that wonderful? You like stuff like that? So, I tell you, I mean, and Samson was raised right. Raised with morals and raised with character and raised with all these different things, but you know there reaches a point in time in your life that you have to start making some of your own choices, and that is where the rub comes in, my dear precious friends, because Samson, even though he was raised right, did right, looked right, acted right, there was something inside of him that was not right, and he started making wrong choices right off the bat. And if you thought this other thing was quiet, I got one more thing that we're liable to get quiet about, but we're going to come around our altars and pray and have a wonderful time after a while and hug necks and act like it never happened. But I'm telling you, this potential of Samson got so heavy, and there was so much that God wanted him to do and God wanted him to be. And remember, parents are the first line of defense for their children. The parents are. Well, that's what we got these pastors for. You better believe it. And on Wednesday nights, and on Sunday mornings, and on Sunday nights, we'll do our best. But Monday, and Tuesday, and Thursday, and Friday, and Saturday, you got to be doing your best. Yes, sir. Now, it doesn't do a bit of good. It doesn't do a bit of good for me to get in this pulpit and preach how demonic and devilish country western music is. I don't care if it's a rascal flat or a flat rascal. I don't care. If there are going to be in an environment on Monday and Tuesday and Thursday and Friday and Saturday that says it's okay, then, brother, sister, when they grow up and buy a pickup truck and set their dial to some country western station, don't blame me. Don't blame me. There's some things you can blame me for, but you can't blame me for that. I stand in a pulpit and I talk about TVs and talk about movies and all the rest of the E's that I got on my report card. If I stood up here and talked to you about all those things and get your undivided attention and go back to the house, and they don't have to go down and buy tickets for the Super Bowl, they can sit at their house and watch it on Sunday evenings. Don't blame me if they grow up to loving sports more than the things of God. You can't blame me for that. Now, there's some things you can't. You can blame me for not preaching the truth. And you can blame me for not telling you what the Bible says about it. And you can blame me for not keeping law and order in the house of the Lord. No, no, sweetheart, no. No, 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 no. Kentucky Derby is in Kentucky. No, 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 no. No, the racetrack is in. You can't. You just go from laughing to silence. I never seen anything like it. We should do some kind of national study in here. There's got to be something that we ought to be studying about in here nationally, with a congregation with such attributes as you've got. Amen. It's amazing. But this Samson had one big trouble, and the one big trouble was some of the friends that he chose. That was one of his troubles. That's one of his biggest troubles. Now, young folks, and I know you're in here, and that's why I asked you to set up real close to the front, and you did. I forget it. But young folks, you know, your best friends, you church-going young folks, your best friends really need to be young folks with characteristics and godliness, and your friends need to be your friends, your church friends. Girls that grow up with a standard and then marry some sheepdog and then come through the door and sit back there with 14 and a half kids crying because her life is tore all to pieces. What? Boys that grow up in the house of the Lord and step outside and some little old short-skirted cheerleader from some basketball team or some football team catches their fancy, and the next thing you know, they're cruising down the street and are riding around McDonald's and Wendy's and with the wrong kind. What? Now, listen, there's some of this stuff. Now, brother, when you was a kid, we don't want to talk about when I was a kid. Because when I was a kid, I acted like a kid. I spoke as a kid. I did as a kid. But someplace along the line, I became a man. And I started making right choices and goodly choices. And if an 18-year-old thinks that they know more than their parents at 18, if they already think they're grown-ups, they should start acting like grown-ups at 18. Yeah. Yeah. Woo! What was that? That was a 19-year-old on a roller coaster. Woo! There went another one. When we reach that age that we think that we ought to be our own boss, you should start making choices of a boss. Now, yeah, that's not the place that's going to get quiet, but I'm getting up there to it. I don't think Samson, was built like, well, basically, you know, me or some other real physically fit human. I don't think he looked that way. I think he, boy, I'm thinking of a couple of folks I'd just love to say right now, but I just cannot do it. I just cannot do it because one of them would beat the snot out of me if I said him. But I think he's just a normal looking guy, actually. I think he was. But there was something about him, you know. But he had this funniest attribute. He always was interested in Philistine girls. Isn't that amazing? Raised in church. Raised in the house of God. Raised with a godly mom and daddy. Raised with standards. No body, no wine, no cutting. Raised with standards. But every time you see him, he's interested in girls that he has no business being interested in. And the day came. This is where it's going to get quiet. Pray, Brother Watson. This is where it's going to get quiet. And the day came. And Samson was out running around. I don't know, he'd been to the fair, been to the circus. I don't know. He'd been someplace where he shouldn't have been to homecoming game, went to the prom. I mean, just stuff like that. You know, but there was a time in his life that he was someplace and he saw this Philistine girl. Now, don't get too much quieter if you are right now. We'll call 911. But he walked back to his mom and dad who raised him right, raised him in church, walked back to mom and dad, and he said, I got a girlfriend over here. She's a Philistine girl, and I want you to get her for me. Now it's going to get quiet. Because here's his mom and dad. Now it's raised him right all these years and saw God on his life. Saw him with conviction. Saw him with conviction. Knew he had conviction. Knew he was going to be raised. And here's his mom and dad. And now, I mean, raised godly. And their son is coming to them right now asking for something that he didn't need. And the easiest, I remember at 6 years old, I told my dad, I need a .22 rifle. You know what he said? No. I mean, I wasn't going to marry the thing. I wasn't in love with it. I just wanted one. I had a little BB gun. And had already shot the back window of my grandpa's car out. One shot. Shattered it. Yeah. I've been talented all my life. So when I asked for a .22, my dad said, no. Can you believe that? What kind of dad are you? I mean, what's the deal here, Lucille? I look like he. I act like he. I'm going to grow up to be just like he. What? He said, no. Samson's mom and dad said, oh, honey, can't you find one of the little girls over here in Israel? Can't you find somebody over here that you can go to a youth rally with instead of a ball game with? Can't you find somebody over here in our bunch that you can go to youth camp with instead of basketball camp? Can't you find? No. I see a Philistine girl over here, and I want her, and I want you to get her for me. And they did. Now is the time that you quit breathing. Because this is the moment that I say, if you're going to raise them right, and teach them right, and instruct them right, and throw them under the train when these great men of God are preaching, oh, if you're going to do what's right by them, when they ask you to do something that is wrong against the way that they were raised, don't go along with them. Well, I didn't raise you that way, but what kind of wedding cake you want, sweetheart? I didn't raise you that way now, little girl. I raised you to be a better girl than that. What kind of jobs he got? What's he drive? What kind of... Boy, you're quiet now. But I'm going to tell you, sometimes Samsons turn out to be the Samsons that they are because the gradual leaving process of their potential started back at the house. If we get in this pulpit and we say that it is not a sane thing to move a television into your house, when they ask for one at Christmas, say no. Well, I tell you one thing, I'm against that rock music, and I'm against that Taylor Swift. I don't think she's all that swift. I'm against Taylor. I've learned some of these names just so you would think that I'm in the know around here. Taylor Swift, I'm trying real hard to think of another popular one, though. And I'm having an awful time. Is Gene Autry still alive? Now, you know in this house we play gospel music. We play the Florida Boys. They are the Florida Boys, or our daily dose of vitamin C. I mean, we play the Happy Goodman families back when they were happy and good, and we play these things, and now you're walking up to me asking me for your birthday that you would like a Dierks Bentley CD. Are you telling me that? Yeah. How much are they? How much are they? You got to... Do they have coupons for them things, sweetheart? I mean, we don't want to drive them off. We don't want them. We don't want to hurt the feelings. We don't want them to leave us earlier than they're going to leave you anyway. Oh, it is so very, very quiet. Maybe it is a good thing the young folks ain't sitting up here on the front row. Maybe it is. Back, back. Maybe it is. But I'm telling you, this happened in this story. And these parents went right along with the marriage. They went right along with it. And I'm telling you this right here and right now. You've got to quit blaming Brother Gabbard on some of the things that's happened to the teenagers under his care. And you got to quit blaming Brother Bridges on some of the teenagers and the things that happens under his watch. And the same thing with me, and the same thing with Brother Roger Boyd, and the same thing with other preachers and pastors in this church. Because, brother, sister, I'm telling you, when we have to fight not only the sins of the youth, but the sins of the parents, we've got our work cut out for us. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And so, I would really like to talk about that a little while. I'd like to talk about the weakness that he had for these Philistine women. I'm not, because I got to move on. I'd love to talk about the weakness that he had. And then I would like to talk to you about the weakness of these parents. It almost seems like that the older the children get, the weaker that these parents got right here. Right here. I'm talking about right here now. I'm talking about right here. The older that he got, the weaker that the parents got. And it almost gets to the place, it almost seems like that sometimes the parents start partaking of the sins of the children. And the next thing you know, there's not just a TV in the boy's bedroom. There's one in his living room. And there's a little one in his kitchen. And there's a little one in his... And it almost gets to the place where, you know, it's not just a CD player in his back bedroom. Now it's in his car. And then the next thing you know, it's playing in the living room. And the next thing you know, Mom and Dad's doing the two-step around the coffee table. How gross is that? I'm telling you, it just seems like that this thing is crescendo. It just gets bigger and it gets bigger and it gets bigger and it gets bigger. And I'm telling you what it does. It kills that kid's chance. It kills that kid's potential of being spotless and spot-free. I mean, it just kills it right then and right there. We want our boys and we want our girls to be moral. And we want them to have good character. We want them to. And they don't just learn all that. They don't just learn on that at the church services. This boy started making irrational choices, irrational things going through his mind. And brother, sister, this marriage thing fell apart. He lost his wife before he even had her. And it was just an absolute mess until girlfriend number two come along. And the next one was a prostitute. Are you getting the progression here? Are you getting this? Are you getting this? We're not just talking now about a good worldly girl. We're talking about a bad worldly girl. You get that? You get that? I'm telling you. And just to be honest with you, I was preaching a youth camp one time. I can't believe I said it, but I was up there just preaching at youth camp, and I was talking about makeup, and I was talking about the ear trims and all the rest of the stuff that people put on it. And I stepped back from the pulpit and I said, "You young ladies may not be prostitutes, but really and truthfully, we should take our sign down if we're not." I can't believe I said that. Can you believe I said that? I can't believe I said it at a youth camp. I can't believe that I had to say it at a youth camp. I can't believe it was necessary to say it at a youth camp. But I'm telling you, that's the progression. That's how responsibility goes. And it gets worse. And again, I mean, at least he was going to be responsible for a wife. Now, he's not even going to be responsible for it. Are you getting this? We are watching Samson go from being a deliverer that could do anything that he jolly well wanted to do for God to somebody now that we don't even trust with our daughters. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Okay. This this little thing here, you know, this prostitute thing here was a costly little habit now for Samson. And I don't think that he was, I don't think he was counting the cost. I don't think that he was. I really don't. But I am going to tell you this, since I'm on such a roll and you're having such a wonderful time. I am going to tell you this. In our little churches, I mean, our young ladies, they have it in their mind that they don't want to be old maids. They don't want to play old maids, and they don't want to be old maids. They have that in their mind. You know, and really, I do worry about some of those children I really do. You know, at 14, you are absolutely an old maid. Okay. I mean, at 16, you know, when most of your friends that aren't in church are already with their second child, I could see how a young lady raised in the house of God, raised with long skirts and long hair and holiness attributes and raised in camp meetings like this. And you're going to go this morning. I don't want to go. I don't like Brother Hyde. I don't like him either, but you're going to go this morning. You're going to go this morning. Thank you for that vote of confidence, you sorry outfit. But I'm going to. We've got some young folks in our churches and some young men in our churches that I don't think they're dating out of love. And I don't think they're marrying because of love. I think some of these things are just convenience packages. It gets the girl out of an unhappy house. I don't love him, but at least he's got a car. It gets the boys out of an unhappy home. I don't love her, but at least now I can get a big screen TV instead of using the little one that mom's got in the kitchen. Oh boy, you're very quiet. But it just keeps costing more and more and more and more and more when you fall in love with the prostituting powers of this world. It just keeps costing more. You have to pay to play. You have to give, you have to pay, it just keeps costing. And the next thing you know, it costs you a divorce lawyer. And the next thing you know, it's costing you an alimony check. And the next thing you know, it's costing you a testimony. And the next thing you know, it's costing you lung cancer. And the next thing you know, it's costing you a cirrhosis of the liver. And the next thing you know, it's costing you a baby out of wedlock. My wife, she volunteers at Birthright, a pregnancy counseling center. And she never tells, she didn't bring her work home with her. Don't tell me nothing about who, what, when, and where. I can't ask her. She won't tell me. It's all very, very confidential. But I know there are times that she comes home and she is more stressed than at other times when she has had an encounter where she is diligently trying to talk a 17-year-old girl out of getting an abortion. Or she's trying to talk a little 15-year-old girl out of getting an abortion. I'm telling you, it costs you things. Even if you're raised right, raised in our church, raised with good preaching, if you step out of bounds, it's going to cost you just like it does the world. And it's going to cost your reputation. It's going to cost you. And if Samson could have stopped right there and come to him, well, brother, I mean, he's tying foxes' tails together and he's burning down the Philistines' cornfields. I know it. And he's dating their daughters. How you like hypocrisy like that? It almost reminds me of preachers that get up in the pulpit and preach holiness and then don't live it. Bless God, I'm going to tie the tails together and send the foxes down this corn row. And when you get home, you don't even raise foxes. You don't even raise them. Sometimes you don't even believe. Oh, my. Now, I cannot lose my backers. I can't. Forget I even said that. Forget I even made some kind of notion that sometimes there's as much hypocrisy in the pulpit as there is in the pew. Just forget I even said that. Forget I even said that sometimes you preach holiness in the pulpit, but you can have a wandering eye. Forget I even said that. Forget I even said that there's a righteous lifestyle and a holiness lifestyle that you are obligated to live. And that also keeps you out of compromised positions when you are not in the pulpit. You getting that? There was a little issue. I've dealt with a few issues in the last 20 years. Some of them wasn't any thicker than the tissues, but I've dealt with a few. And one particular day, my wife was at Birthright, and I was at home. I don't think I was doing the laundry. I can. I have before. And my wife ended up with new clothes. Different color. Different size. What happened to my skirt? Was that one of them I was supposed to put on permapress, or can you just turn it on hot with the rest of the towels? You don't ever put it in there with the rest of the towels. Well, you won't have to worry about that one. Right there. You won't have to just take it in the bathroom and fold it. It's about the size of a washcloth now. But my wife wasn't home. And I do take care of some of the menial chores there around the house at times. And there was a knock at the door. And opened up the door, and here stood a young lady with her children. And she was crying. And she said, I need to talk to you. And I said, I'm all this running through my mind right now. Birthright, Birthright. Well, I said, Birthright. Nobody's here in the house. Nobody's here in the house. There's no television cameras on me at this present moment. And there is no neighbors out in the yard at this present moment. And everything looks like the coast is clear. We'll just talk out here on the porch. But I wanted to come in because I have to tell you something. Listen, you can have a nervous breakdown on my porch just as easy as you can in my living room. And so I stepped out on the porch. Yeah. Ain't you proud of me? Huh? Ain't you proud of me? Man, autographs? Autographs? Me sign your t-shirt? I mean, ain't you thrilled about, pens won't write on t-shirt. Got a marker? I mean, I'll sign the back of your hand. Ain't you proud of me? Isn't that amazing? And you know, isn't it amazing that after all these years, same wife, same woman, same character, same testimony, same beautiful face. I know it's been hard on folks. Same beautiful face. You know, it is amazing that here I am, 56 years old, and Brother Horton said, Brother Hyde, I don't want you to come to the day services here in the camp. Because isn't that amazing that I can do this? I mean, who would have ever thought back when I was just a beautiful baby that I was going to get asked to do this slot right here? I'm telling you, potential. I mean, I saw responsibility, and I saw my potential. And you don't get yourself in a compromised position. You men, you quit buying your gas at the Quick Mart where the little girl flirts with you every time you go in there to pay your ticket. You don't like candy bars, and you know it. You just go in there so you can visit with her. And any man in this room that treats the waitress better where you buy food, a hamburger, than you do your wife, you're a scoundrel. Oh, yeah, that's all right. Oh, I'm sorry. You wanted sweet tea. Oh, that's all right. That's all right. That's all right. If it'd been you, you old bag, I'd have knocked your dentures out of your mouth. Oh, that's all right. That's all right. That's all right. Oh, you're quiet now. Honey, what are you leaving that $20 bill on the table for? Tip, shut up and go get in the car. And I have to grocery shop with coupons? You're a scoundrel. You like that word right there? I'd tell you how to spell it, but there's one thing that I was bad in, and that was spelling. I cannot spell it, but I can smell it a mile away. This thing, you know, Don't you just love this preaching? I'm stretching my glasses. Don't you just love this? I'm telling you. Then came, and I'm done. Here come the bottom line. Then came Delilah. And according to calculations now, I can't prove it with all the pieces of silver that they handed her, but I can tell you what I read, and I can tell you what I jotted down. What I jotted down was, in our current style of money and the economy that we've got right now, they paid her about $25,000 to find out where the strength of this boy was really at. And what is so sad to me was the strength of this boy was really at home. That's where he started losing strength. That's really where he started losing. And now you're going to be quiet. You're going to be quiet, but here is the progression. When she got to dilly-dallying, talking to him about his convictions, about his standards, she said, she was asking about this. He said, oh, but you know, if you tie me up, if you, you know, he started going down this list of jokes. It was just a joke to him. Just a joke. I mean, every time he gets behind the pulpit, he gets anointed anyway. It's just a joke. Anytime he gets up to sing, he knocks it out and breaks three light bulbs with his tenor voice. It's just a joke. And so he was just joking with Delilah. But I'm going to tell you something. He had already played around with a dead body. So he had lost that conviction. And he had already gotten drunk. So he lost that conviction. All he had left was his standard. That's all he had left. That's all he had left was his standard. And that's usually the last thing that goes. I'm telling you, when somebody walks in the door and we say, oh, she's cut her hair. That's just the symptom of her losing her convictions way back down the road. Her coming in that church house with her haircut isn't what makes her a backslider. Losing her convictions is what made her a backslider. And you can do that and sit in church with long hair. You can walk up here and sing in this choir as long as you girls don't cut your hair. And you can have the convictions and the morals of an alley cat if you're not right in your heart. We can't see that. And that's been one of the downfalls of some of the independent holiness churches all of our life. Because we have based our entire move of God and what you can be by the way you look. And I think that we should first base it on the way you live. A lady comes into our church. She gets down. She prays through at our altar. She stands up and she starts jerking the jewelry off. She stands up and she looks at us and she talks about getting saved. And the next thing you know, she's getting the baptism of the Holy Ghost. The next thing you know, I mean, she's coming to the door. Her haircut looks like mine. And she's standing up now and she's getting the baptism of the Holy Ghost. And on this side, we've got a lady that looks right and dresses right and acts right. And the hair drags the floor and she hasn't been moved on by the Holy Ghost for years and years and years. And yet, which one is the real sinner now? Oh, you're so quiet. You're so quiet. And I'm telling you, I'm not reneging on standards. I'm not reneging on convictions. If you're getting that kind of mindset about me, I have no intentions of joining the charismatics. I ain't going to do it. But I am going to stand up here and I'm going to tell you that if you're going to amount to your greatest level of potential, then you're going to have to be responsible. And when you're responsible, you got to be responsible for a lifestyle that we can't see. I'm telling you, my daughter's a good daughter and she's never cut her hair. She's never cut her hair, but she's on the track team at her organized sports school. And are you getting this? We come into the house of the Lord and we put these boys and we allow them to be anything they want to be. And they're at home of a night upstairs looking at pornography on the computer. Are you getting this? And then we went, Brother Gabbard's message yesterday and what I'm going to preach on tomorrow. I mean, it was so monumental. I just felt it. I felt such a burden when he was talking about revival. We got to have it and we're going to have it. And yes, we are. But then I got that feeling all over me when he was talking about more than just shouting and more than just running the aisles. That's right. That's right. There's a responsibility that comes with revival. Oh God. And they played and he laid in her lap and she cut his hair. And the next thing that happened, when his standard left, his power left. I had a fight with the high school over in Southern Illinois when I was pastoring at Jonesboro. And the fight was, I had some young ladies that didn't want to take PE. They didn't want to participate. So they asked me to write them a letter. Of which I did. And I really had a problem with one. Because one young lady that wanted to get excused out of PE, she was the most likely to not succeed out of the entire group. Caused me trouble. Kind of flirtified. And all the boys kind of gravitated to her like a magnet. And she, at the youth camp, sometimes she wasn't in the altar. She was out behind the dorms and we had to run her down with a flashlight trying to find her. And so here she's walking up to me, asking me for a letter of excuse to get out of PE. Look, I really had some trouble with that right there. I had a hard time wording that. You know, I had a hard time wording that, knowing that I had 427,819 angels looking over my shoulder. I was having an awful time wording that. Okay, you getting this? Last week or so ago, I stepped off on the campground at Granite City, and I walked in the tabernacle, and they've been there every year that I've done the day services. I love the day slot. But I walked in there, and there was this family on the pew, and there she was. Several months back, my telephone rung. It was a cop, and he said, I'm a police officer on the force up here in la-da-da-da-da. And he said, I'm having an awful time. He said, I need to know what you think and what you say to the fact about me being a police officer and trying to be a Christian if the time ever came for me to shoot somebody. He said, what do I do? I said, don't miss. I didn't even get the Cruden's Concordance down. How do you like that? I didn't even get the Cruden's Concordance down. I mean, that's, and I had this conversation with him, and then lo and behold, he married that girl that I was talking about. And when I walked in, this young lady walked up to me, just smiling, long hair, long dress. And she walked up and she said, Brother Height, who would have ever thought that the most likely to not succeed did? Yeah! Yeah, I mean, right here. And I turned around, just to be honest with you, some of the rest of them young folks are charismatic. And some of them are a maniac, and some of them ought to be in the attic. I'm telling you, but she grew up, and she got responsible, and she's still making responsible choices. Here she is at camp meeting, and she's still doing right, and her marriage is together when theirs ain't, and her family's together when theirs ain't. Listen, Samson, I'm done. Samson lost his power when he lost his standard. So now we're grinding here at the mill. We are, I am, that's what I'm doing right now, having cornbread. We're grinding at the mill, and you can't tell it from where you're sitting, but my hair's growing right now. See it? It is. It's growing pretty slow, but it's growing. I seem like I felt it. Seem like you'll never do that again. But howbeit his hair began to grow. Now don't get quiet on me. Now it's time for fun and games. And what are we going to do? We're going to make fun of the guy who lost his standard. We're going to play with the guy that was so much and he has so little. And you're quiet and I'm done. And so he steps into the arena. He leans against the pillars. And according to the scripture, he brings the house down. And he kills more Philistines than he did all the rest of the time. So how are you going to end this message? I'm going to end it like this. What was he doing in that temple with his eyes put out in the first place? What was he doing there? Oh, Samson. Oh, Samson. I think we're making heroes. I think we're making heroes too quickly out of people who made bad choices. Yeah, but they're in. Yes, they are. But they will never be in like they could have been in. Yeah, but boy, look what a testimony he's got. Yeah, but look what a testimony he could have had. And so I'm done with this. One question to you teenagers and your moms and dads about the boys and the children and your pastor. I mean, maybe you got a pastor that has failed in the pulpit and you've had a scandal, you've had to replace it. I don't know. But here's the last thing. How'd you get like that? How did you get from there to there? How'd you do that when you wasn't raised that way? Father, now just for a few minutes today, yes, I wanted to talk about Pentecost. Yes, I wanted to talk about the Holy Ghost. Yes, I'm liable to do that tomorrow or Wednesday or Thursday. Yes. But I had such an overwhelming sensation that I should step in this pulpit on this first full morning of our visiting friends here, not just regular church service at the tabernacle, our first elective service of camp meeting, congregation that are here because they want to be, not because they had to be. They didn't have to buy a ticket. We are here, all of us this morning, because we want to be in this room. And I felt, even sitting up here on the platform, that I might miss a golden opportunity to talk to some mom and dad who are right now on the brink of making bad choices for their children. And they would like to take each other by the hand and step out into the aisle and walk down to the front of this church. And before they bury themselves in a piece of carpet, they stand and they raise their hands and they say, "Oh God, I need you to help us. Before things go from worst to worst, I need you to help us." And instead of the wife reaching over asking the husband, "Should we go down there and pray for our children?" Wouldn't it be something, God, if some responsible man in this room recognized that he's the spiritual leader. He's the priest of his home. He's the one that should reach over and take his wife by the hand and say, "Sweetheart, let's walk to the front of this church. Let's lift our hands and let's ask people to gather around with us that we make right choices for our children." Or the teenage boy that's fixing to leave home because of a job and because your mom and dad want you to be home before midnight and you don't think it's responsible to have a curfew. or the young lady who's got a boyfriend, and your mom and dad is against it, and yet you're sneaking around texting, and you're sneaking around with your other friends, and they're helping you make little rendezvous. I'm telling you kids, I'm telling you young folks, I'm telling you grandmas and grandpas, I'm telling you preachers on the edge of assassinating your own character. I'm telling you, you don't have to end up in the temple bringing the house down on a room full of the enemy. You can stay out of there. You can stay out of the mill. You don't have to go to the, you don't have to lose your eyesight. You don't have to lose your head. You don't have to lose your testimony. You don't have to do it. And so your heads are bowed and ain't nobody looking around. And I'm asking you as sincerely and as sweetly as I can. Is there a man and woman in this room that'll shuck themselves out of that seat like fixing an ear of sweet corn and walk down to this aisle together and throw your hands up together? And ask, in doing that, a few of the husbands and wives in this place that are living as sanctified as they can, to join you in prayer that you continue making the right choices. But right now you're up against it and you need help. Or I'm looking for some young lady that was fixing to leave home and you've changed your mind this morning. Or some young man that's already been experimenting with a can of Skoal, and your radio dial right now is already set to something that you wouldn't want us to get in your vehicle and turn it on loud and listen to the last thing that you've been listening to. I'm looking, I'm asking, my head's bowed, my eyes are closed, but I mean to tell you that this isn't an indictment against anybody that gets up and comes down to this altar. It ain't an indictment. We're not setting up a court and a jury here. We're not going to put you away for 20,000 years. No. We're going to rejoice in the fact that the revival that Brother Gabbard was preaching about yesterday has begun. That's what we're going to rejoice about. So I'm looking for a husband and a wife right now. Or I'm looking for a teenage boy right now. I'm looking for somebody that still has their standards, but you have lost your convictions. And you want to come down to this altar because you know the next thing that's coming towards your life is the scissors. I'm looking for somebody in this room that's already doing things now that you said, told God 20 years ago, I'll never be part of and I'll never do it. And it condemns you every time that somebody preaches about it. And this morning, you're tired of living under that condemnation. You're going to get up. You're going to come down to the front of this church. You're going to raise your hands. And you're going to watch a big God take care of a big problem in our little lives. Going once? What are you going to do if nobody comes? I'm going to come back at 2:00 and back Brother Gabbard when he hits it again. Going twice? What are you going to do if a mom and dad don't want to admit that they're allowing things and doing things that they wasn't raised to do and they're allowing their children? What are you going to do? I'm just going to say it's a happening everywhere. It's a happening in every church. And until we get a burden of responsibility upon us, it's going to continue to happen. Am I down to two? Am I down to two? Do I have, is there one teen? Am I fixing to sell out this service and not one young lady in this room come out of there with her hands up telling God, I want my convictions. I want stronger convictions than I've ever had. Have I not got one teenage young man in this room that'll come down to this altar, offer himself, and tell God, I want to keep my strength. I want to keep my strength up. I don't want this to tear me down. Last call. Last call. Oh, yeah. Going once. Going twice. Man, I've never sold a family in my life. I've never sold a teenager in my life. Going twice. Here it comes. Gavel down. Sold. To the highest bidder. And so now, my question. Brother Horton wants the microphone here in just a bit. And I'm going to turn around and hand it to him. But my question. Is there anybody in this room that feels a deep-seated need that you should pray? Is there anybody in this room? Is there a grandparent that all of a sudden feels like, I really need to get up there and pray for my children, they're in a mess? Or is there any of the young lady, maybe I'm just going to open up the altars and ask the folks that are sitting here in this congregation, if you are really, really interested in God arresting our lives and giving us a revival, and you're interested in starting this week in this camp meeting, why don't you come and pray about that? I'm done. Why don't you just come around here and build you an altar? Seek the face of the Lord. I'm going to hand the microphone to Brother Horton. Why don't we come around these altars? Why don't we come around these altars? Do I think that people who needed to come a while ago and come now, do I think it's too late? No. No, but I think there's a pride issue that's liable to still keep you from getting the victory you need. You think it's too late if all the girls come and gather around, pray with one another? No, I don't think it's too late. But I think there's a pride issue that keeps you from coming. And I think the same thing with the boys. And I think there's been a lot of preachers that if we had got up when we was admitting that we were having a struggle and we come around that altar, I don't think it would ever got as bad as what it did. Oh, we want to seek thy face, Lord.